This is the RCR, show 23 of the Retro Computing Roundtable, recorded live on Saturday, February 18th. But no matter where I go, there's one thing I'd like to know. Will I ever find my way back to Oz? We talk about computer history, news, and nostalgia. Why? Our friends and family wonder the same thing, but us retro geeks get it. I'm your host this time around, and I'm Earl Evans in rainy Portland, Oregon. And I wanted to mention, we're the only retro podcast with a money-back guarantee. With me is David Grealish, and he's in the Atlanta, Georgia area. David is a master sushi chef, and he's also an amateur unicycle performance artist. Hey, David, how are you doing today?
Why, Earl? Why do we have to do this every 3 weeks?
Because we like you.
I asked for a break. Don't you remember?
I do remember that.
Hey, Earl, I'm doing good. Ready to go.
David, you're the chief cook and bottle washer of the Atlanta Historical Computing Society, right? So
yes.
How's that going these days? Are you guys doing good?
Actually, we're doing really good. It's been doing good for a while. We're still a small group. I would say, on top of my head, we have like a discussion email list that probably has 40 people in it. And there's some people that aren't local. And of course, we are primarily a regional group for the greater Atlanta area. But we have six very dedicated, foundational members, so that's really good. That's
awesome.
Why we're able to sustain and I think grow, and we've had a few people joining recently, so I think there's a great future for it. And in fact, I want to mention we have something very special going on today where we meet every 4 weeks, but we're actually doing a special meeting. We just met 2 weeks ago where there's a local man, and he's got a huge collection. He actually wants to start a museum. I mean, he literally has a museum. Just not a formal space for it. He's got a lot of storage. So just real quickly, he has an Apple One. He's got all the Apples covered. He's got an Alto and a Xerox Star. He just got a Cray 1 supercomputer.
Wow.
He's got, Altairs and M-Size and all the S100s covered. The early IBMs up to the PC and some later one of those. What am I missing here? Yeah, Ataris, Amigas. I mean, he's got it covered.
You got to wonder how many people...
Robots,
either a house or a garage full of these things in various condition, and you just don't know about them because they're either not plugged into the hobby or something like that. I've wondered that myself. I wonder how many collections there are like that.
Mm-hmm. So there's about a dozen of us signed up right now. We're going to all go take a tour. And so just to end it real quick, off the top of my head, I'm going to guess he's probably got, it's got to be 5,000 or more, 6,000 square foot, of machines and stuff, probably more than that. So, substantial.
And he stores them where? Where did you say?
He's got an adjoining property. Yeah.
Okay.
And his address is, and the combination to his...
No, I didn't mean specifically where.
No. He's in Roswell, Georgia, which is not too far from me in Alpharetta, Georgia, north of Atlanta.
Cool.
So, it's an adjoining property with like a big, what would look like a big two-story house, which is just like a... sort of a nicer than a warehouse, but basically a big open two-story house. It doesn't have separate rooms in it and stuff.
Oh, for the money and land to do something like, wow. Well, that's cool.
Well, who's that other guy on the line?
We also have Carrington Vanston in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, eh?
Hey.
And Carrington, unbeknownst to most people, is the author of the famous cookbook, Acrid Cheese, Dishes You Can Make at Home.
Sequel to How to Serve Man. Yes.
Yes. And it's awesome. I use it every day or every week. So how are you doing, Carrington?
I'm kicking butt.
Hey, so my son wants to know what the latest thing is on the time capsule because I told him the story and now he is just on the edge of his seat.
Well, I went down and had a meeting with the management of the building and finally got somebody who was leaving for lunch. I said, if you're leaving, will you walk through the lobby? Can I walk through? Can I point with you to the plaque to prove that this thing exists? And so now I have one person who works in the Xerox management at that building who does acknowledge that there is the time capsule, that other people can see this, not just me. And she said, oh, yeah, I guess we should do something about that. And that's where we stand at the moment.
Then, who are you again?
Then her friend showed up as she went to lunch, and that's how far I got.
Oh my gosh.
So still, months
just
are going
the funniest saga ever.
Yeah. So still can't get at my stuff. Oh, so I'm going up there soon with a screwdriver.
Well, you know, I tell you, I understand the frustration, but you know, the one thing that we know we can do is talk about retro news items. So, how do you like that segue?
Awesome, very professional.
Wasn't that just
you are
incredible?
In that down, really.
smooth as cracked iron. So, Carrington, you are first up. Tell us about Retrode 2.
Well, it's too late for you now because it's sold out. At least this batch has sold out, but I have ordered myself one. You can find it on StoneAgeGamer.com. What it is a little device that you can plug into pretty much any computer with a USB port. It caught my eye because I'm a Mac guy, and it's hard to find fun, retro-oriented computer peripherals that will connect and work with Macs, and this does. But it also works PC, Unix, Linux, or whatever. And what it allows you to do is plug in cartridges for various games. It does Sega Genesis, it does Nintendo, SNES, a few different things. And so if you're – well, you can run emulators for these things on your computer. That's easy enough. Go grab ROMs dubiously, legally, and just play them on your computer. What's nice about this is it plugs in by a USB, and you can – plug actual carts in. So like I've got a SNES, but I don't have a Sega Genesis. So, but if I want to play actual Sega Genesis games, I can go get just cartridges now and add them. I don't have to go get a system. And what I like about this is, so you run an actual emulator, plug your cartridge into this little device, and the emulator will read the ROM off the actual cartridge. No law breaking. You're plugging your cartridge in. It's yours. And it has two ports on the side to plug in actual controllers. Mm-hmm. So the nice thing is you can sit down with your Super Nintendo controller and play an actual Super Nintendo cartridge via an emulator. Your computer basically becomes the television for it. I've played with one. It worked really well. I've now ordered one of my own. This batch has sold out, sells for $90, and I think they'll have another run of them soon. Anyway, I'm just really excited to get my hands on one.
It's kind of a hybrid solution, isn't it? Where it's,
it is,
it's
yeah.
The physical
it is.
Part of the gaming experience and with the real games and cartridges and all, but then you know, hybriding, connecting up to your modern computer.
Yeah, so what I like about it is it's a bit of a space saver. So if you want to have access to these games and play them and stuff and play actual cartridges, but you don't want to go and have to collect and have the space for a bunch of actual systems, this way all you need is this one little box, a couple of controllers, and then just the cartridges. And you can play real games. Your computer subs as the television, but you don't have to have systems. So if you're you want something a little more legal, maybe this is a nice approach, but also if you just want it to, well, I want it more as a space saver. Yeah. So anyway, it's a gadget for fans.
What was up with the retro? Like, I assume there was a regular Retrode before the Retrode 2.
I don't know. I hadn't ever heard about this. I saw this just linked someplace and went, oh, I want to have one of those. And I'm glad I ordered it really quickly. I didn't think that they would sell out, but they have.
Very nice.
Now, did you consider, you say you have a SNES,
yeah,
but you don't have the Genesis, right?
No, I don't, and I've never had one. So
now,
this
did you ever
I can play
you consider games. You know, yeah, buying a used Genesis versus buying?
Not
this?
Really. I'm strangely, I don't know. Let's just use the word prejudiced. Like, I'll have my camp of things I like. I was a Nintendo guy. I was an Apple guy, and so I'll generally just collect along certain lines. But it's nice to dip your toe into other systems, and maybe I'll end up loving the Genesis.
Cool.
I don't know. my toe's in a Genesis, so this will be my first opportunity to play Genesis games. So I'm not even sure where to begin.
I don't think I've played them either. I'd be interested in what you think. Because, you know, it was an interesting system and popular with a niche of people. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. Yeah.
And I like, since it just runs off basically any computer and it's really small itself, just a little tiny box and a couple of cartridges, it's the kind of thing you can lug along to events and stuff. Like, I'll bring mine to Kansas Fest, for instance, so other people can play with it. It's a lug-along sort of device.
We'll spend all night playing games that people
yeah,
really
absolutely.
Eyes in the morning. Well, speaking of games, David, Space War, it's having its, what, golden anniversary here?
Yeah, so along the same lines about computer gaming is the granddaddy of, I guess, all computer games, Space War. So this news is a little bit old at this point. I guess it happened right after our last show. So what was it, on February 8th? No, on, trying to find the date. Well, in any case, so the game turned 50 years old.
Yeah, February 8th.
Okay. And then so there was a celebration at MIT, and they did a big mock-up of like the original, what the display looks like. So if you go to the show notes, you can look on the link here, and there's a short video. So basically, Space War was, again, the granddaddy of all video games. It was played on the PDP-1. And actually, if you ever go to the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California, they have a real working, restored PDP-1 that they can demonstrate Space War, which I've seen that, and that's pretty amazing. But so the... you know, displays in themselves were pretty unique in 1961, I guess, when it happened originally. And it was a, what's the game, the name of the game? Raster Graphics, or is how it was done? Sort of like...
Vector Graphics.
Thank you. Vector Graphics.
Basically, yeah. The exact opposite of Raster. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were as wrong as you could possibly be.
I'm doing that a lot more lately, too. I can't remember words. I'm getting old. So yeah, so it was a vector graphics based game, and I guess another early game, Asteroids, was obviously I think inspired by Space War. So just an important mention.
Asteroids, even though I think in some cases it's rendered with raster, it looks very vector graphics. Have you guys ever seen the Vectrex?
Yes.
The old video game system. Those things are cool.
I was always a fan of vector style games like Battlezone and stuff in the arcade.
Yeah,
I like Battlezone was awesome.
And Tempest was a great one, too.
Oh, yes. And especially if you've read Ready Player One. It's important to be really good at Tempest.
That was very impressive, I think, at the time. I'm thinking 1981.
I'm impressed now.
Or actually, even late 70s, wasn't it, for Tempest?
Yeah. I mean, I like that game. I love Battlezone. I wasted way too many quarters on Battlezone.
Wasted. Then,
invested.
Invested.
Is that a better way of putting it? Yeah, well, speaking of old computers, I have an older one to talk about here, actually. The Colossus system, you know, built at Bletchley Park in the UK, as I recall, a wartime system. The first modern computer, actually, is what it lays claim to. And they've done a rebuild of this. It's a fascinating project, another one of these where, you know, they go and they recreate a part of history that no longer exists. And people have an opportunity, if they want to actually sponsor what they call a valve, you know, basically a tube on the newly rebuilt Colossus at the National Museum of Computing in Bletchley Park.
And I thought it was one of those funny, you know, words where, you know, it's always been called a valve in England, and yet a vacuum tube or tubes here.
Yeah, exactly. Valve, I always think, what you going to turn on the water kind of thing?
Yeah.
But it is kind of a valve if you think about it. It's just an electrical valve. Yeah. So
I think the game company should change its name to Vacuum Tube.
that might take a little work on their marketing collateral. But I'll have a link up here in the show notes so you can go over and check out how you could, if you want to, sponsor a valve on Colossus and I guess literally get your name up in lights?
Yeah, and you should go look at that webpage, the National Museum of Computing. So they basically have a graphic up of, bunch of valves and then people's right. Little icons
and
or pictures.
And little faces on them, yep.
Yeah, so that's kind of neat. That's pretty creative.
And the whole effort's just great. You know, I mean, this was a piece of history that was lost for a while, as I understand it, because, you know, part of this stuff was classified. And so, you know, now it's out there and people can learn about it.
I know we mentioned the judgment recently about Alan Turing. Remember where the UK government decided not to overturn the original conviction or whatever for him. But so he was obviously very central to this, to the Colossus and the whole code cracking thing in World War II.
Mm-hmm. So here's one that I have absolutely no segue for. So I'm just going to jump the tracks and say, Carrington, tell us about the F-18A video board.
Yeah. Had you brought this up one other time?
Did I?
I don't know. Maybe someone in my group did, but go ahead.
You have other groups than I do.
Yeah. The AHCS, Atlanta Historical Computing Society.
He's still cheating on us again.
again, David. Oh, I'm jealous. This is my way of showing that while I am fully ensconced in the Apple camp, I do try to be aware. You know, the whole keep your enemies close thing, keep your Earl Evans closer. So the F18A is a pin-compatible replacement for the video data processor used in a lot of old home computers. It replaces the TMS9918A, the 9928, and the 9929. So that's what was used in the TI-994A. It was used in the ColecoVision. It was used in the Atom. It was used in the SpectraVideo 328. I think the Tommy Tutor. Like, it was used in a bunch of things. So if you are like a hardware guy and you are comfortable perhaps taking your Coleco apart, your ColecoVision, desoldering the video chip, putting in a socket and replacing it with something else, then I've got something for you. So why you would want to do that, why you would want to put in this F18A is you would now have full VGA out. So it's getting increasingly difficult for old computers and old video games to be hooked up to anything like a modern television. So if you've got one of those, or perhaps a spare one you're willing to Frankenstein, then you can pop one of these in, and by pop I mean solder, and you can now hook it up to a modern VGA or SVGA computer monitor. So it's fully compatible since it's pin compatible. You just pop it in and you don't have to do anything else, but it does require a hardware change. But so I just wanted to bring it up for people that are hardware hackers and who might have a system like this or a few of them and wish they were a little easier to use on modern displays, then this is one option.
What, won't this void the warranty, Carrington?
Oh, yes.
Also, it says you need to order by February 24th.
Yeah, they're taking pre-orders at the moment. Basically, it's going to be, I think, a build-to-order sort of unit. So it's about $100, $98, I think. And you just, you know, take out one little board, pop in a different one, or a socket and a board. It doesn't come with the socket if you need one. I think he said that they know it's the ColecoVision, the Atom, and the SpectraVideo 328. Those are the three that will need a socket. But if you can solder anything, then you can solder a socket. It's not that big of a deal. I even did one at Kansas Fest. Anyway, it's a hardware option for those looking to upgrade some old games.
Yep. And I love stuff like this that gives you the ability to hook the old systems up to newer monitors, mm-hmm, or
something
newer storage.
We're sorely missing in the Apple II world is easy VGA use.
Is there not a VGA card for the Apple II?
Well, there was the Carte Blanche, which isn't sold anymore. But if you have that, there's a way to do that. I have used a bunch of – I have three or four little video adapters that will take the – I think it's 15 – Hertz, kilohertz, 13, something like that, the older version of the NTSC. I think it's 15 kilohertz NTSC. I've got a few little things that are converter boxes that you can plug something in and it converts it over to something more modern. Two of the three work with my Apple IIs and the other two don't seem to do anything, but I'm not sure if it's me or them. I don't know.
See, that seems in my opinion, that would be the easiest solution if you had the little box and it's got, VGA or DVI coming out one side and then you've got arrangement of different connections on the other side to plug in your RCA or your Apple II or
the
Amiga
problem is like a lot
whatever.
Of old computers used very weird little kludges to get their various resolutions and stuff like that out. To get something that fully supports, say, everything an Apple IIgs can throw at it is a little more difficult. And whether you're using the composite video or the Apple IIgs,
yeah,
I think it's a VGA port. I don't know, magic port. I'm an 8-bit guy, so I'm really not as aware of the 2GS.
I think a 2GS, isn't it like the original VGA standard, like 256 colors VGA?
I think
perhaps?
So. You know, I'm totally out of my depth.
Not super VGA, in other words?
If we were Open Apple, we would simply call a hardware guy, and he would just get on the phone and tell
laugh.
Us.
Yeah, would you like to use a lifeline?
And mock.
Exactly.
But we're not cool like that. We don't have connections like Mike and Ken.
Yeah. Our nemesis.
So that's what I got you. F18A. Spend $100.
Cool.
Upgrade your ColecoVision.
Yeah, was
excellent.
There any, was there any explanation why it's called named after the jet? Did it say I didn't
know? No. I don't know. That's, yeah.
That's cool.
I didn't even think of that.
Sleek.
Maybe it's supposed to be pronounced Fatina.
All right. And with that, hey, David, you got a couple links for us?
Yeah, these are...
I have a comment on your first one, by the way.
Oh, good. Because to be honest, I'm not that familiar other than I visited the link and I looked it over. And unfortunately, so this is one of our listeners, emailed this to us and I didn't write down who it was. So my bad, because I know, Earl, you have a couple other people who submitted things, and you're giving them credit. But in any case, so we had discussed about the what is it called, the Apple one we discussed.
Apple Game Server.
Yeah, the Apple Game Server, where you can
just awesome.
You can download the games, through like MP3, through the internet, whatever. So this is sort of the
whatever. He said dismissively.
I guess I'm saying it because I'm so not familiar with, because I haven't had chance to do it or anything. So.
Right.
So, Earl, feel free to talk about this. The Commodore Server is kind of along those same lines, or it's like online disk management for your Commodore software.
It is. It's a really interesting solution that kind of goes hand in hand with a internet modem device that you can get from the same site. But you don't need the internet device to use the Commodore Server and vice versa, but it works like this. On Commodore Server, you can upload disk images, and on the website, you can actually see, it's got a little app that'll let you peer inside the disk image to see what files are in there and stuff like that. So it's kind of a nice cloud-based way to store your images. Now, if you've got this internet modem that comes along with it, then you can connect up to Commodore Server and pull the information from the disk images, like mount those images directly over the internet. And what's really cool is that these guys, and, personal friends are here in the Portland area, actually, and they have
nepotism.
They've worked it out where your Commodore can connect to this Commodore Server at 38 kilobaud, 38.4.
Wow.
And
that should be
how they squeeze that much bandwidth out of the 6510 processor is it's miraculous programming, and that's actually a recent addition to their code. But yeah, it's a interesting and fun way to store your stuff up in the cloud, pull it down to your real Commodore, and it's got more than that actually too. They've got a chat program that you can do with this internet modem. So sometimes people jump on their real Commodores and sit there in an interactive chat, kind of like an internet relay chat room sort of thing. So, what else can I say about it? It's the site is nicely laid out too.
I see that the site has multiplayer games. It's promoting Group Zork.
Right.
That sounds very appealing to me.
So, again, you get on with this internet modem, and you can play a game of Zork. You can have some interaction with other people that are in that game of Group Zork. Isn't that fun?
So it makes Zork into, like, a MUD?
I don't remember the level of interaction. I mean, I think you can see other people, but I'm not sure you can do things like hand them things. Like if you've got the lamp, I don't think you can hand them the lamp, that kind of stuff. But I could be wrong. I mean, they could have upgraded it by now.
Earl, I smell new sponsor.
Sorry, that might be me. Sorry.
So what's the other link?
The second one is a link to the Retro Challenge. So basically that ended at the end of January. And so I just wanted to point that out. And so anyone interested, you can go there and read all the final, what happened? Were you involved with that, Earl, this time?
I wasn't this time.
Okay.
Not in the winter warm-up. I just didn't have the time. But there was some very interesting stuff that happened. I think people should go over and check out the projects that folks did. Some of the, like any retro challenge, some of the people got traction and others just, got stuck in midair. But
I know we have a further down, you're going to talk about another of our listeners who was involved. But real quickly, so there's some good special mentions in here. And it looks like the winner was Linville for his fantastic efforts in both Cocoa development and a good mix of text, picture, and video blogging. And so it doesn't really – oh, and also Andrew Hazelden for a soccer game developed on a nice vintage SGI box.
It is. I think the Cocoa thing was an actual game that was being developed for the Retro Challenge. So,
but you can see I haven't spent all that much time reading it. I've just been so busy, but I wanted to make sure to mention it.
Well, you were just talking about the Apple Game Server, and that was a Retro Challenge thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because if you look down, you'll see on the contest list where it says Data Jerk, Apple II Plus and 2E 9600 BPS cassette interface downloader. That's it.
Great. Good stuff.
Lots of Apple stuff.
So, yeah, on an Apple note, Ken Gagne of the Open Apple Podcast. Hey now, we're sending the love to Ken, because remember, we have to live through Kansas Fest, right? And payback is, well, we won't talk about it. But he emailed us about Howard Scott Warshaw. Now, if people don't know that name, yeah, he was the guy who programmed the much, you know, beleaguered,
vilified
E.T. game for the Atari 2600.
But also, let me throw in, so he made what is generally considered the worst game for the Atari 2600, but as well as what's considered one of the best games for the Atari 2600.
And he mentions that in this link that we're going to have in the show notes.
And I never knew that. I wrote back to Ken saying, I never knew he was also the Yar's Revenge guy.
Yeah.
So Howard Scott Warshaw mentions he has the widest range of any famous game programmer.
Totally.
Did the worst, did the best. So, and there's a movie being made called Angry Video Game Nerd, the movie. And it's this, I feel like it's got to be this kind of tongue-in-cheek script, but revolving around this whole E.T. debacle. And Howard Scott Warshaw is actually, it sounds like, going to be in the movie. So you should go over and take a look at. I loved the entry here, the blog entry by Warshaw. I thought that was some of the funniest writing I'd seen in a long time. So, and yeah, it's interesting how he embraces the doom of having written the E.T. game.
Now, in case people haven't heard of it, if we haven't discussed it before, we should throw a link in the show notes to the Angry Video Game Nerd. I think it was on Indiegogo, and they raised a huge amount of money. I think they were looking for something like $75,000, and they raised over $300,000 to make it.
I wanted to mention that, too. I'm glad you said that, Carrington, because, you know, I was so impressed, and we should be impressed with Jason Scott, how much money he raised on Kickstarter. But then, right, this comes to, you know, I find out about this, and this guy raised like three times as much.
It's crazy.
I never
even
heard of that site before. So
I hadn't heard of it until after it had closed. So I probably would have donated.
But the Angry Video Game Nerd or whatever. I've only seen a few of his stuff, but he's very funny. Now it isn't totally family friendly all the time, I guess.
Neither am I.
but you know, but it's definitely can't argue with funny. So he's pretty funny. It's a pretty amusing little thing.
Funny is good. I'm very much looking forward to this.
Mm-hmm.
So from the Millennium Falcon to Sinclair, I guess you can make anything with Lego?
Yes, you can.
So
I haven't looked at this.
Yeah, what do you think, Carrington? Tell us.
Oh.
Well, there's something that I hadn't – well, Lego. I've heard of Lego. We've probably all heard of Lego. But I had never heard of – I guess it's pronounced Kusoo, C-U-U-S-O-O, which is – sort of like Indiegogo or where did you raise your money for your book, David? What was it called?
Kickstarter.
Sort of like Kickstarter for Lego. So what you do is if you design what you think should be a Lego kit, you then take a bunch of photos, make a description, etc., and you submit it, and then people can click basically that they support it. Nobody's spending money. They're just saying, hey, I like this. I would like to buy something like this. And if you get at least 10,000 supporters, then it gets put in front of the official Lego Star Chamber or whoever decides these things. And it can be produced as an actual sellable kit. And if your kit gets produced, you get a percentage of all worldwide sales. It's really neat. So anyway, this guy, the reason I heard about it was I stumbled across a link for somebody who says there should be kits for Lego retro computers. And he's done up a little mock-up of a Sinclair. But he says, you know, you could do an Apple II, you could do a VIC-20, you could do a bunch of things. I would absolutely buy kits like that. I think there is a market. Unfortunately, at the moment, he's only got 47 supporters. So of the 10,000 he'll need,
that's only 9,953 to go.
Well, what I'm disappointed at is it looks like he's got 47 supporters, but 7,500 views. So most people have viewed it and not clicked support. So I'm hoping that the retro computer, the audience,
come on, fans.
Yeah, we'll actually go out to the site and click. You don't have to pay anything. You just have to sign up and say yes, support. So, and I'm going to do that. I'm going to sign up and I'm going to click support on this because I would love to buy like an old. And he thinks it's a good idea. They could come with little minifigs. So if you buy the Apple II, you get a little minifig of Woz, say, and that kind of stuff of the person most associated with the computer. I just really like the idea and I like the look of his designs.
Hey,
I want to see how they make a minifig of Jack Tramiel. That's going to be hilarious.
But I like how it talks about how each model, like when you build it, would have a liftoff section, would give it a – so you get sort of an approximate of the inner workings. Like here you can lift off the top and you sort of see the major chips that were inside the ZX81. So I think it's
so
such a
cool.
neat idea. Yeah. And so I'm very disappointed that it's got so few supporters, and I'm hoping a lot of people – it sort of gets the word out in the retro computing neighborhood. Well, I don't know what word I'm looking for there. But
yeah, no, let's tweet about it. You know, we talked about it here. Let's tweet about it. Let's see if we can get –
And this whole Lego Kusu thing is really neat. Like there's a lot of very neat ideas on there. This is just the one I want to promote most.
Just real quick too, and I have not looked at this in a long time, and I want to verify it, but I know with my son, my youngest son, I've looked at it before. I'm pretty certain – Lego, just offhand, you can also go there and essentially create your own kit.
Oh, cool.
Just offhand, where you can, in other words, you can, you know, I imagine it's a little pricier than obviously, you know, just buying a kit. But in other words, they'll make a box for you and everything.
So if somebody was to design this and make basically a parts list to say, here's what you need.
I think so. I think
you could just sort of issue that and say, hey, make your own Apple II and here's what you'll need for it.
Yeah.
Go all homebrew style. Nice.
That's a link. Could you dig up that link? David, do you think?
Oh yeah, I'll try to find it.
David, do it. Do it. Do it.
Let me make a note of that so I don't forget.
We'll just chant at you. Link, 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 link. You won't forget.
Awesome. And hey, we got some email feedback. Actually, we get a lot of email feedback. And David has been championing the replies to this. Thank you, David. You know,
yay, David.
Golf clap.
Sure.
We got email feedback from Andrew. And he said, you mentioned the Brielle 8800 Micro as a gift suggestion in episode 22. He says, I built an 8800 Micro for the Retro Challenge 2012 Winter Warm-Up. Yay! And have comprehensively documented the experience at vintage8bit.com. And that's the number 8.
Right. And we'll have a link in the show notes.
We will. And it's so awesome, you know, the blogging and stuff like that on this kind of thing, because if you haven't built your own, if you can't afford, I mean, let's face it, unless you're Carrington, you can't afford to buy and build everything.
Buy and build people out of Lego, late girlfriend of Lego. I know you're as weird as David.
Wow. Well, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was a great kit to build, well-designed with an excellent build guide for the inexperienced hobbyist. I'd recommend it for anyone with an interest in the early Altair, MSI, and other computers of the age. But who doesn't have the budget or inclination to buy a real one?
Nice save. Who doesn't have the budget?
Yeah, who doesn't? Yeah. Easy for me to say. What Steve Martin said, some people have a way with words and others don't have way. But
to build mine, so mine is still totally in kit form.
So you have one?
Darn it. Yeah,
awesome.
I had to have one when it came out because I loved the whole blinking lights and switches and stuff, I've had an MSI and Altair over the years, and I don't have one anymore.
Toggling in the programs with the switches, there's a YouTube video on this. It's really cool. In fact, it might even be Andrew's, because I think I might have linked to it off of the Retro Challenge. I don't know if he's got a video of this up, but if he did, then actually toggling in the programs on this 8800 Micro, it just looks so fun, like, you know, so Stone Age. So thanks, Andrew, for writing in. We appreciate that.
Yeah, he really did a great job documenting it. Like, it's really interesting to look at.
Oh, let me mention something real quick. It says, you know, while you were talking about that one. So I did find out where Lego stopped. They stopped what was called Design by Me. The last orders they took were on the 16th of January this year.
Oh.
So after 6 years, and it says millions of orders, you can no longer do that, where they'll make your own box and all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of sad. And I don't know why they stopped. Maybe it was just not cost effective. So anyway, go ahead and answer that in the same
Darn
show.
The Danes. Darn them.
Yes. Well, yeah, way to get everybody excited.
I know.
Wouldn't you like to do this? Ha ha.
Thanks, David. Yeah. Hey, you know what you can't do? Thanks, David.
I guess
I wasn't missing it till you brought it up.
Tell them what they haven't won.
When cool things happen, you snooze, you lose.
I'm not there.
Anyway, sorry, everybody.
It's high school all over again.
Well, so more feedback suggested by Kendall.
Leave us alone.
All in listener feedback email, a YouTube channel and blog. Oh my gosh, these videos are great!
Crazy, wow. Crazy! Isn't this good? Oh, we should tell people what they are. We're just gushing about how cool it is.
Yeah, but so the Alker 33.
They've been removed.
Vintage. Yeah. Wouldn't you like to see these?
Sorry.
Well, you can't.
David took them out in January.
So there's a YouTube channel with just some of the greatest vintage computer videos. And high res, did you guys blow them up to like full screen? So
yeah,
that you
it's amazing. It's amazing the clarity of this. It's like, in fact, I was thinking of this guy when, David, earlier you were talking about that fellow with the thousands of square feet of stuff. I thought, is it him? Is it this guy? And this guy's video channel is amazing where you get to see hands-on stuff with vintage computers.
But he is the guy who has all the Lisas. I know.
He's got all the Lisas in the world. If you look at his blog, it's like,
incredible.
I'll sit in my room full of Lisas.
I mean,
I think he dug up that landfill.
Which, you know, are worth thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it's one of the first videos that I saw on his channel. And, you know, you actually get to see the Lisa boot up and the floppy go in. Everything's, like you say, Carrington, it's amazing high-res.
And it's like new. He's got like brand new versions of everything.
Beautiful. I hate him.
I know. I'm so jealous of this guy. He's got – it's so pristine, and it's just like being in the room with them. It's, if you're interested in this kind of stuff, his is a video channel definitely to go check out.
Yeah, his Pet 2001 with the Chiclet keyboard, you know, it's the pet you want to have if you're a pet collector. And it again, with the pristine, just in beautiful, like just came off the showroom.
It really is an example of somebody who really – is a good collector. Like, I've got just sort of piles of a few things and I don't really keep anything. This guy has just got such a beautiful collection.
Yeah, we're not worthy.
Yeah, both the YouTube channel and his blog. Like, look at the photographs on the blog. Like, just to see him sitting in the room full of look at all. It's like the ceramic army in China buried in the ground. It's like him just sitting with these rows of Lisas.
And he's an active seller on eBay too. So I think a lot of these, he restores them, cleans them up, and then sells them.
Wow, well, he's a guy to buy from.
He bought one of these specimens.
He's in Germany, I think, or maybe it could be Switzerland or Austria or something like that. And Finland? No? Oh, anyway.
He's probably Danish, and he bought all the Lego.
eBay.at. What do you think? What would that be? What country?
I don't.
The country of Altair.
You've stumped the band.
Ba-dum-bum.
I don't know. We'll have to check that out. But it's somewhere across an ocean somewhere, I think. It's not here in the U.S. I can't go see it.
It's Austria.
Austria. Okay. There's an A and a T in that. If you can't afford one of his real Altairs, then you could use an emulator, he said, Segway style.
Nice. Nicely done. Yes, Kendall also pointed us to the Altair 8800 emulator. You guys ever played with this?
Nope.
It's pretty cool.
I played with a real one.
I emailed Kindle and I sent him a picture where I actually took that emulator. I took a real good screenshot of it. There was an MSI one. It's been around for like over a decade or more. And and I actually took it and I reversed it. And then there was a time where I was trying to make, believe it or not, plush MSI and Altairs.
Would so buy one of those.
It turned out to be too much work, but
I'll bet.
I'll have to put in the show notes now, but I just make
plush
one.
Altair.
I have one plush MSI, one plush Altair.
You actually have them? Oh,
yeah. How am I the single one on this podcast? I don't understand.
Post to the blog.
Yeah.
Totally. That's awesome, David.
Man. So, okay. So, but we got to move on. It, as fun as that is. David, you had a note in here about the Zeta single board computer, a Z80-based single board.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about that.
So this is also sent in by one of our listeners, Jay Alexander. And let's see. It's supported by Sergey. Is that how you say that? Sergey.
Kislev, I think.
At the NAVEM project. So it's just something I wanted to mention because one of our listeners brought it to our attention. So I don't know a lot about it, but it looks very interesting. So essentially it is a CPM, it's a Zilog Z80 based single board little computer system that you can run CPM on. You know, it would run sort of like what an S100 system. And if you go over the link, it's pretty neat. So he says it was inspired by the Ampro little board Z80 machine. And essentially it's, so imagine what a standard little 3.5-inch floppy drive looks like. And then this board is just about the same size, just barely a little bit longer. And there's a picture with the board and the floppy drive mounted on top of it.
I've so wanted to build one of these because, you know, CPM is, it's got a soft spot in my heart. And, you know, I just got to get the time and actually feel confident in the soldering skills that it takes to put something like this together. But the NAVEM collection of projects, you know, this whole thing kind of coordinated by Andrew Lynch, which we'll have a link for that up in the show notes as well. You know, the Homebrew Computer Project by Andrew Lynch, and you know, they've got S100 boards that they make for a variety of purposes. They're involved in an IDE and compact flash board that you can put in old 8-bit IBM XTs. And just this whole collection of cool stuff that you can build revolving either around CPM or the early IBM PC world is just it's awesome. But again, you know, the soldering skills, because these things are not – I wouldn't call them beginner projects. If you look at the amount of soldering that it takes to put one of these together, I'd say it's probably at least intermediate. But they are very cool.
So you would suggest I leave it to my minions.
Exactly.
Nice.
As I would do.
Love a good minion project.
Well, I think the other issue with this one, and I had emailed Jay Alexander back about it, is that you also have to get all the parts. And
you do have to buy the parts for these. Now, they have parts lists, and typically they'll have the cross-references to, like, Mouser Electronics or DigiKey or places where you can go out and get them, but you do have to assemble the parts
yourself. Yeah, so I'd like to make a call out if anybody would – you know, who knows what kind of market there would be if it's worth anybody's time other than a you know, a thing of love or whatever. But if someone could put together, like, little kits of this stuff, I would love to – you know, then I could just buy that.
Buy it as a kit, maybe a little markup and something like that. That's a good
all
idea.
All the parts and everything, and then put it together. Because I'd love to have this little thing, but I just don't have the time or the energy to find everything and order it and stuff and get it right now.
That would simplify things. I can tell you, these guys are definitely in the DIY, you know, the do-it-yourself electronics camp. It's like, it's a labor of love to build one of these things.
But you know what? I just had an epiphany, though. This, you know, I think I'm going to bring this up to our group, the, you know, the AHCS, about this would be a great project for us to do, where we all, because then we could go in together and acquire the things needed and do it as a class over maybe a couple of shops.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Yeah, the way Vince Real has his classes for assembling things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And whoever's the strongest at soldering could give people tips, and it could be a learning experience.
We're actually looking at the picture. I guess these would all be individually soldered from underneath, right? The ICs on this board?
I believe so. Well, they probably socket the ICs, right? Don't solder them directly to the board, but...
Okay, I can't tell from the picture. I guess so. Yeah.
I mean, maybe. I've never built one.
Or could it be that they're all put in their little, I don't know the verbiage, but in their little holes, and then where you put it in, like, the solder's, like, flowing, and you stick it down in it, and then lift it up, and it all solders everything?
Well, I don't think they're surface mount stuff. I think all of their stuff is through hole.
Okay. Mm.
Soldering. So, but anyway,
till I know what I'm talking about.
I think so. Again, I haven't built one, so I don't know. I could be wrong. They could have some surface mount stuff there. That gets a little more complicated with the solder flow. But if you're good, you can do it without with the writing.
Well, I'm not good. I try to avoid all surface mount stuff.
So basically, the show notes, we have a link to, you know, both that, the Zeta SBC, as well as the Homebrew Computer Project main page here.
Yep.
Wow, it's amazing.
Yep, head on over and take a look.
So you're saying that the NAVEM, that's run by Andrew Lynch, and he posts regularly at the Vintage Computer Forums, right?
He does.
He said segue.
He's our new fan.
Nice. Barrington, but hey, who's hosting this show?
You.
But I'll take the handoff. I'll be the straight man. Speaking of the Vintage Computer Forums, there's a new forum section over there, the Retro Computing Podcast Forum. We convinced Eric over at the VCF, not to be confused with the Vintage Computer Festival, but the Vintage Computer Forums, to set up a podcast forum area. And we would like to actually, if you've got feedback on our shows or just general discussion or whatever regarding the Retro Computing Roundtable, we'd like to, you know, direct you over there. Let's get a community started over there.
Yeah, we'll have a link in the show notes and also on the new website, which should hopefully launch by the time people
Yeah, we are still working on that, everyone, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
And here's the beauty part of this. If you go over to the Vintage Computer Forums for the retro podcasts, you will also find a great variety. We've talked about it before, of different subject matter to talk about over on those forums. Mm-hmm. There's a great thriving community, lots of postings every day. They've got a handy RSS feed that you can subscribe to, which is how I get all my updates for the various forums. You're going to find people to talk about what you want to talk about almost no matter what area of subject.
I like the idea of, instead of having a forum on our own site just to discuss our podcast, that we just go over there and play in the bigger pool of, mm-hmm. of vintage computer discussions. And it'd be great if people want to just talk about not just this show, but any retro computer podcast, just have a place to sort of talk about them in general and give various feedback and suggestions and that kind of stuff. So it'd be nice if it became a bit of a community.
Yeah, it kind of consolidates the retro community, mm-hmm. you know, because if you got 100 forums you got to visit every day, the chances are, you know, pretty slim you're going to have a hangout. And mm-hmm. If you're going to have a hangout, this is a pretty cool hangout. So we'd like to invite you over and give, you know, props to Eric. Thank you for setting that up
very
for
much
us.
So.
And, you know, the mention, too, now that we're part of that community, we need to start, I guess we need to do more with the marketplace there.
Yeah.
So we need to look at that more, I guess, with our auctions.
Yes.
Looking for a powerful home computer? This is the one. Texas Instruments home computer. With 16K memory, it can take you a long way. Want a computer with a lot of software? Oh, yeah, this is the one. The TI home computer gives you more of these software cartridges than any computer in the world. The whole world. So, with all the power you have here to run all the power here, this is the one. The home computer from Texas Instruments. This is the one.
Hey, play a video game?
Sure.
Now, command the powers of Atom.
That's a game?
Atom, the complete 80K computer system and super game system.
That's some game.
Atom has super graphics. All the arcade screens, all the bonuses, all the intermission.
Even a Hall of Fame.
Atom includes the Buck Rogers Super Game and plays all ColecoVision accessories.
Let's run my satellite tracking program.
That's some game.
Command the powers of Atom and program your future.
David, how'd your auction for last time go?
Oh,
you had a Sharp Expert Pad, which was a Newton clone.
Has not sold. Still there for $499.99. If only they would lower it to $449.99. I think that would be the key, right?
Wow.
No, so that hasn't sold.
I'd jump on it at that price.
It has not ended, and you know it has not been relisted. So
it will never end.
I kind of think. I don't think any of us thought it would sell for that much or even possibly get bidded up for that much. And the other one was an original Apple Newton message pad, which it did sell.
That one did sell, yeah.
So $57. That's not bad at all in the original box and everything. $10 shipping. So
I should mention last episode I had said, like, if somebody wants to get into this and buy a Newton, what would people suggest? And I had a bunch of people write me directly. But they all sort of suggest a different one, so there's no real consensus.
Oh, really?
So, but most people were saying I'm better off with the high number ones to go with I guess it's the 2100 or so, that if I'm just, you want to play with one, and then that's the way to go because it's a lot faster or what have you, and there really aren't a lot of incompatibilities. But a lot of people were promoting, no, go collectible, and they like the form factor. It's nicer in your hand or something. A lot of people were saying the original size. So,
I think the Newton is a good example of the two main camps, I'll say, of you know, the first versus I really want to do something with it and I want to use it and play around with it. So mm-hmm. obviously an argument for getting a latter Newton, you know, one that is more functional.
Right.
So
yeah, so I had about the same amount of people. I think it was about maybe six or seven people for each camp wrote me. So and I think I have yet to write back to any of them, so sorry. I'm terrible with feedback.
I wouldn't write them anymore.
But we're talking about it here. We are talking about it here. I had a K-Pro and it didn't sell, and it got relisted, I think, one or two times. I think it got relisted twice, and now its starting bid is really reasonable, $29.99.
Wow. Yeah.
Not another computer that I want to buy. I've got one later that I want to buy, too. No space, no money, but lots of computers. Isn't it the way?
K-Pros but, are very unappreciated. Are there just so many of them or something? I haven't been watching them that closely.
Awful lot of them
but
on eBay.
They're not
yeah,
selling.
But 30 yeah. bucks as a starting bid, like that's nice. Like versus the $100 was high, I think, but for $30, wow.
30 bucks and 32 bucks shipping, man, I would buy it. I would.
Really? $32 shipping? Not for us Canadians. For me, it would be $102.80.
Wow. No, it's only 32 bucks to me. And it's in Oklahoma.
It's like 23 to me.
You see why I got a shipping company to sponsor 1 megahertz?
Good call.
It's like, holy cow.
Oh, I want this K-Pro now. Anyway, so yeah, it didn't sell. It might sell now. I know who might buy it. Carrington, what about
mine sold for $2,700. I think we should be keeping track of total sales values for the eBay, because I think I'm kicking your butts.
You
I keep
are
picking these expensive.
So totally winning.
So yeah, and so I had picked the what I called an Apple IIe starter kit. It was the Platinum computer and the monitor, the drives, all with boxes, all basically, well, they were open, they were completely unused, still in a shrink wrap, and a nice collection of software, and free shipping internationally from Bulgaria, of all places. I think it was Bulgaria. Yeah, from Sofia, Bulgaria. And it sold for
$2,700. Wow.
So
I
I'm
didn't
gonna
think
say,
it would go for that much.
Yeah, I thought, you know, it could break 1,000, but there still is this Apple II mania going on right now.
I think it was because it had all the boxes and it was like a complete set, and the
it was
very
brand new too.
Yeah,
and you know, new in box Apple IIe's. How many of those are left? You know, near zero. So,
and even the software was good because it was
high.
Karateka. In the box, like a complete copy with manuals of Karateka in the box for the Apple II, usually goes itself for quite a sum. So it had that and Castle Wolfenstein, the two of them, also in boxes and complete. So the software itself would have raised the price too. But as a set, I'm surprised it went for $2,700. That's
yeah,
a lot of money.
I think that's a little high.
But it's a nice set though. Like if money was no object, this is the kind of thing I would have wanted. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's a sweet system.
One of the downsides is with a new in box that you don't know if it's going to work because it hasn't been plugged in and powered up, right?
But you get to open it, and oh, I do love to open things.
And you could do it with the microphone.
But it's just
right
so nice to see it. Like, it's such a nice – I mean, it's
beautiful.
It's so complete.
You know, no,
with all the
no
software that came with it,
over time.
Like it's got absolutely everything you would have got if you had bought it brand new at the time. So just such a nice setup. But anyway, $2,700.
And I think there's more to it than this – oversimplification I'm going to make, but I would kind of call this sort of like the convenience store factor of, because certainly you could acquire all this stuff, maybe not necessarily in the box and new, I mean, but you know, close enough probably for at least half of what, you know, but you'd have to, it'd take you a lot longer, a lot more work up front and from multiple people.
But Karateka never comes up on eBay. I would have snatched that up if it ever got on. It never does. I've been dying to play it. So yes, it is. It is one of those, you know, if you've got the wherewithal, you can set up a great collection just in one eBay click. And it's a worldwide market. Like, so if with free shipping somewhere, like anywhere in the world, there's going to be somebody who says, you know what, I'm getting on in years and I've been working for a lot and $2,700 isn't going to bankrupt me. So let me have my perfect Apple II. It's a great experience.
Yep.
Wasn't me, but I'm jealous of whoever was.
How
able
do you
to
like it?
Buy on that.
Speaking of Karateka, wasn't there something in the news about that recently in the retro news? I thought I read something about like a port of Karateka or something like
oh,
that.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Either of you guys hear about that?
No,
I'll look
no.
into that for next time.
Because that was a great game. That's a game I loved, and I haven't played because I've been trying to get a copy for 1 megahertz. So I want to get a full one in box so I can do the unboxing and stuff. And I can't track one down. I've been dying to play it for ages now.
Yeah, I'm looking on eBay right now, and they're all Atari 7800 and 5200. There's one Commodore 64 version.
There was something. I'll look it up. But so, Carrington, you went last, so go first. The first shall be last. So tell me about the ZipChip 8000.
I know very little about it, other than – so it is the
– we should mention – we're now into current auctions. Sorry, I didn't do the segue there. So
Miss Takata, Miss Takata. So how we
know the current auction.
Right. So the Zip chip, as a lot of people know, is something you can shove down into your Apple IIs, Apple II Plus, IIe, etc., to basically speed it up. We were talking last episode, I believe, about the new release though of the 6502, and we were saying, hey, can you know that new one that's going 800 billion megahertz or whatever, and say, hey, can you just pop that into your computer? Well, this is essentially what people did at the time. A Zip chip, you could push down. This is the Zip chip 8000. So as far as I know, the 4000 came first, and so this would be the slightly more rare one. I am very much out of the loop when it comes to Zip chips. This one has a starting bid of $100. It has the Zip chip and the software, and it's basically the whole little setup. So you have the box, the software, the manual, etc. And it's just a way to essentially speed and free shipping. Is it free shipping for me too? No. $14 shipping for Canadians. You know, speaking of which, that always bothers me. When somebody will offer free shipping in America, then you should give the same discount for the rest of the world. Like, it bothers me that they don't say, and $6 off for everyone else. So, like, we don't save anything. Anyway, I'm bothered. I'm still linking to this one. So it's the Zip Chip 8000. So since it's used, though, he's saying he has no way to test it, doesn't know if it works, no returns. So it's definitely a caveat emptor thing. But if you're looking to speed up an Apple IIe or an Apple II Plus, you want to stick with the original hardware and stick with the way that it could have been sped up at the time, so you're not, you know, sort of breaking its vintage mystique, then a Zip chip is a way to go. And these don't come up on eBay very often. So it's an opportunity for the next little bit to get your hands on one.
And, you know, it's called 8000 because on the box, if you see the sticker, it's an 8 megahertz.
That's 7 megahertz too much.
That's why I really want you to buy it, Carrington. So you can
you'd have to change the name of your podcast.
I want to just listen to my podcast sped up.
The 8 megahertz Apple II podcast.
You wouldn't think that I could be sped up, but
I was going to say, aren't you sped up already?
I think you're naturally two times. So I guess it was, I'm looking on the Wikipedia, and so it came as, this is the 8 megahertz version. And there are lots of different Apple II accelerators, but this is sort of one of the most famous ones. So,
You think it's going to sell?
I do think it's going to sell, and I think it's going to sell for more than the $99 asking price. I don't think it'll sell for $800, but I bet it sells for a couple hundred.
I think it might take time, though. I think this person will hold out, but it may not sell this round. But yeah, I think it could easily get $100.
So Sol 20, David, this is awesome. Tell us about the Sol 20 auction.
Yeah, and this is, my wife tells me, one of her favorite old computers. So I've had a couple over the years. So, you know, the processor technology Sol 20 was an S100 computer. So in other words, compatible with the Altair and MSI. And I think the Sol 20, I believe it came out in 77. Might have been 76, but, you know, fairly early on. But it was unique in that it was definitely along the lines of being a more of a consumer, as far as S100 kind of computers went, more appliance looking. It had a built-in keyboard. It had a nice wooden sides too. So just an attractive older computer. But it had a sort of a unique early version of what you'd consider, what you'd call a BIOS nowadays, the personality module. And so that made it more like what you expect from a modern computer. Because, you know, old computers you'd turn on and they did nothing except powered on. And you had to bootstrap them to accept a program or whatever. Did you guys ask something?
No.
Oh,
no.
I thought I heard somebody.
Nope.
So the seller only has one feedback, which doesn't necessarily mean they're, you know, they're not trustworthy or a good seller, but obviously they're new. So
just means you don't know.
Yeah, keep that in mind. They have one that's 100%. And so anyway, a very nice machine. It's at $310. It's got 4 days to go. So I think if you could pick this up, you know, for anything less than $600 or $700, I think would be a good deal.
I think it would be a deal. It's an important piece of history, too. I think it was co-designed by Lee Felsenstein,
who also
did the Osborne 1 and was with the Homebrew Computer Club.
Yep.
So, yeah, really interesting historical legacy there. I think the wood panels came because they had some left over from a project that his roommate was doing. I read this in Fire in the Valley, if I remember right.
Oh, it does ring a bell, yeah.
And offhand, the name.
I love Fire in the Valley.
The Sol was named after Leslie Solomon, who was, and I always get this, was he the editor? I think he was the technical editor of Popular Electronics magazine. So he's the guy who worked with, you know, Ed Roberts. They have the Altair article come up, and, you know, so he was very integral in those early days of the Altair and then the microcomputing hobbyist world, you know, the mid-70s.
And I agree with your wife. I think the Sol 20 is very awesome aesthetically.
Yes,
I think it's a cool computer to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got one. David, this is your fault.
Right.
You tweeted about this eBay auction. It's for a vintage Epson QX10 computer system.
Oh, you know, I'm not going to be able to get the show out before it ends, unfortunately.
No, this is
3 hours and 34 minutes.
It's one of the few times that I actually have an eBay auction that I knew would be closed by the time the show published, but I couldn't help myself.
What a deal it is right now.
Yeah, only $33 at the moment.
Oh, my gosh. I told my wife I'm having real problems not building it. You think so?
Yeah.
Because it might, and it might be me who snipes it. We'll see. So the QX10, interesting legacy on this computer that, you know, it came out with a full-fledged WYSIWYG sort of word processor system called Valdox. And it was and Valdox itself, lots of interesting behind-the-scenes stuff there. I actually worked at Epson at the time this computer was being sold and the software was I didn't work there when the software first was released, but as it was being upgraded and that it was a distributed programming team. You know, they worked in various locations and then consolidated their code. Real progressive kind of stuff for the early 80s. But the computer just didn't quite have enough horsepower for a full WYSIWYG sort of thing. I mean, it's a Z80, you know, and it was just chugging as fast as it could, but performance was an issue. But very fun CPM computer to work on. I did DBase 2 programming on this guy. And so I'd love to have this. I think if you look at the floppy drives on this, it's interesting because they're third height floppy drives, which you'll see occasionally in computer models, but you know, they're just really slimline kind of floppies. The monitor too, so incredibly crisp.
Epson made that good stuff.
Yeah,
they really did. The one early computer store I worked at, I always really liked the Epson, and at that time in 86, 87, they were selling, you know, just regular IBM compatibles, and I really liked their machines and all.
The equities were good, too.
Yeah, that's what they were. The equity 1, 2, and 3, I believe, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And just to mention, Earl, I don't know a lot about it, but I think this machine, it had a very dedicated following. It was a niche market, you know, but it had a strong following. Stan Veit had one of these that his wife used and loved for many, many years. And actually, I acquired it from them back in the mid-90s, and it was in my collection for a lot of years, and then it stopped working, so I don't have it any longer, and I didn't throw it out, but I don't remember who I gave it to, but I gave it to another collector.
You gave it to this guy.
That'd be funny, wouldn't it? But somebody else who, you know, could take the time to work on it or whatever.
So but, this one, the pictures don't show it working, but the description says he did turn it on, that the COT is bright and clear, and it said insert disk and stuff like that, so it does seem to power up, even though the pictures don't really show it.
Right, and the interesting, this auction, this machine was stuck in a closet for 20 years. It probably works. Yeah, I mean, it was working when it was given to him. I mean, you might need to do things like look at the capacitors, you know, the power supply and stuff like that to make sure that the stuff isn't about to blow up. But
I hear a little popping noise.
But I bet it works, and so I'm really intrigued by this. When I worked
at
Epson
with a bunch
in those days, they actually would let you take a computer home, you know, that just like a loner, so that you'd get to know how
the computer
works.
A few companies
did
that. I remember Apple for a while had that whole, you know, try it for a while before you buy a system. A lot of companies were trying that in the 80s.
And I remember when I had to give this back, it just broke my heart. So I might just have to, I don't know.
And it comes with the Peach Pack?
I know. It comes with the software, the CPM software.
You can run your business on it.
Remarkable. Mm-hmm. You could.
Which would be awesome. Anybody out there running a business on something like this, I will totally patronize you in both senses of the word.
So I'm going on and on. I know we're shy on time, but boy, I'm really tempted by this one.
Well, we'll be watching it. So between the three of us, let's either tweet it or email it when it ends and see what the deal was before, mm-hmm. you know, 3 weeks from now when we touch on it again.
Yeah, let's
I'm interested
it.
To follow it. Hey, let's make a prediction then, Earl. How much do you think? What do you think it'll sell
for? How much will you buy it for?
It's going to sell for what I bid on it.
What's the top end?
And I'm not telling. So, anyway, so Cheyenne
Times. Let me make a prediction. I think.
Yeah, you tell us.
And this is,
what do you think?
See, it's tough because, again, I think it's kind of underappreciated, though. But you never know. There's people, there's niche, you know, people that like all kinds of things. So I'm going to say $90.
Okay. What do you say, Carrington?
Throwing it out there.
I think with only 3 hours left, it's got six bids. So I suspect at least one other person is sort of waiting to snipe it at the end. So I think it'll go for more than that. Actually, I think
I think it
could easily go for that if enough people are looking at it. So I'm gonna guess that it goes for more than 100, but hopefully it goes for $35, and that's the next bid, and it's Earl's.
It's had 226 views at least at this very moment.
Right, but you never can tell. Wow. It's like that zip chip I did. I forgot that the big idea of the zip chip is you can accelerate a 2C. It's one of the few. So I think it's gonna go for way more than I thought. I forgot the appeal of the zip chip is it works in it's like the only accelerator you really. To use in a 2C versus the ones with the slots. So I think if it catches on, it could sell for a lot more. But yeah, I think this will go for hopefully very little and hopefully to Earl. That's what I'm
thinking. Cool. I'm crossing my fingers too.
Yeah.
So closing discussion, I'm going to go first since I'm hosting.
Okay.
I'm just going to steal the microphone. My fun thing in the last couple weeks is trying to rebuild a Xerox 1750 printing terminal. It's a daisy wheel printing terminal. So very interesting. Tractor feed paper. You know, one of the old things that you'd hook up to your mini or mainframe when you wanted to get your hard copy output. And I had a Diablo 1650 daisy wheel printer in a remarkable stroke of luck. Somebody had given me one of those. And so I was swapping out parts because they're virtually identical to each other, except one has a keyboard and the other doesn't. And by swapping out the right parts, I actually made it work. So
cool.
So I'm like, I'm again computing like it's 1979. And so what about you, Carrington? What's on your plate?
Been reading a lot of Nibble magazines. And really enjoying it. I have now 4 episodes of 1 megahertz in the new format of that, which is so different than the old shows, in the can. I'm doing the next one tomorrow where I have a person coming over, a second voice for that show, which means hopefully the new episodes will launch on Monday. It'll be an every 2-week things on Mondays. So hopefully this Monday it launches. And but mostly I've been reading a lot of Nibble magazines. A few people have sent me them, and I got some at Kansas Fest. So I have a massive, massive pile of old Apple II programming magazines, and I've been reading them and trying to get inspired for something I could do as a Hackfest contest at this summer's Kansas Fest, because I'm definitely going and I've never done Hackfest and I'd like to maybe program something. So I've been reading those to try to get myself back into the Apple II programming game.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And David, you've got a meeting of the Historical Computer Society, and also you got a new podcast in the wings.
Cheating on us again.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm very excited to announce it, and it will be up today. So it's like last 10 minutes of editing work to be
done. As long as it's not another Apple podcast.
Right.
What's it called?
It is in fact called, so I got to prepare to do it. You have to say it just right. You ready?
Ready.
Not another Apple podcast. So basically the main gist of the podcast is it's a show about Apple, about current Apple Incorporated as with a look back on Apple Computer Incorporated, I guess, or Apple Computer Company. So sort of discussing current themes and things going on with Apple and then looking back on its history in the past.
So it's not all vintage stuff.
No, it's kind
so
of
I'm
a
not
nice
that
blend.
Jealous.
And hopefully that'll be a unique niche and maybe even bring some outsiders, if you will, mainstreamers of Apple topics in that wouldn't necessarily be interested in history. So
there might be a whole podcasting wing of the at Kansas Fest that we all stay in.
So this first show is basically a look at the Apple stores, and we go back on the history of how you bought Apple computers. And then sort of a basic premise too, are some Apple stores not working very well any longer?
The one in the Eaton Center in downtown Toronto is one of the sort of medium-sized ones, not really, really small, but not huge. Crazily busy, like every second of every single day that it's open.
They're all like that.
And when you walk inside it, it kind of smells like a gym. The Apple Store, I've been to a few of them now, and the really, really busy ones are not well ventilated enough for 500 nerds an hour to walk through the place. They're starting to smell like a science con.
Oh, that was artists. Who go there?
It's weird though. There's starting to be a bit of a stank to Apple stores, and that's the only downside about them. They got to start to ventilate a little better, I think.
Well, we talk about this, so I mean, you kind of hit on it. Is that Apple's huge success is starting to become part of their downfall in retail. Now let's
their
be honest.
Downfall as the most valuable company.
Exactly. They're not. You know what I mean? All they do is continue make cash hand over fist, right? And you know they're the most successful retail operation per square foot, everything else. But I got to think it's going to start. You know, let's just put it this way. I hate going to Apple stores now, at least the ones near me, because they're a pain. Anytime I walk past one in the mall, it's filled. And it's not fun to go in there.
It's true here in Portland, too. The two that I know of, you can't get in with a shoehorn.
Yeah, it's a circus, and it's just not, you know.
So I do like this new thing they're coming out with where you can buy stuff online and then just show up and take it.
Oh, that's new, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm keen on that. It'll also be interesting to see how they change now that there's a new guy at Apple in charge of them, and the old guy's gone to Kmart or something? Where did he go to? Target.
JCPenney.
JCPenney.
Yeah, he came from Target before Apple.
Right. So be
yeah, we talked about that a little bit. So yeah, you guys, and I hope everybody gets a chance.
Well, interesting. Congratulations.
Thank you. I think it'll be good. We have other interesting topics planned. So this is a show we're going to do. Keep it about an hour.
Who's
about
your co-host? Did you mention?
Thank you.
Listeners.
It is Blake Patterson, who's been on
the
show.
No, that's a fantastic choice of co-host.
Yeah, he does the Byte Seller blog, and then he does Touch Arcade, which is about iOS gaming.
Knowledgeable and personable, and like you couldn't have picked a better co-host. Like, that's fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, I think me and him get along pretty good and talk well, you know, work well with each other.
And
we
love
have to evolve
Touch Arcade
a little bit, you know, just like we all had to here, I think.
Sure.
Yeah, I totally agree with Carrington. Blake's a great guy, and I love his sites. I'm very much looking forward to this podcast. And genius, brilliant idea, by the way, blending modern day and the retro stuff together in a podcast. I think that, you know, you could talk about whatever
you want to talk,
you know, in that particular genre. And it's just going to open up a lot. So, anyway, can't wait to hear it.
I'm blowing on my fingernails and rubbing them against my shirt now. Well, and I think the more, you know, offhand too, the more retro computing, not a play on, I don't mean it as a pun on the name of our show, but the more podcasts, the better. You know, the more
cross-pollination. Will you direct your listeners to go to the Vintage Computer forums and hang out?
Yeah, I will. So, yeah, we will. Because certainly now I'll bring that up to Blake. Because we're going to have a webpage, and he's handling all the back of the house stuff because he's good at that. And so not another ApplePodcast.com. But yeah, absolutely.
So it's not
there's
another
no reason for us
Apple
to
podcast.
Make another
so what
forum.
Is it?
Not another ApplePodcast.com.
So it's not another Apple Podcast.
Right.
So what website is it? Who's on first?
Who's on first?
And will you have a link to that up in the show notes?
Yes.
Awesome.
Self-aggrandizing.
Sorry.
That's right. Yeah, just link to your own stuff. We'll also have a whole bunch of links to my blog in the show notes. So there. I'll show you all.
All right. Well, speaking of that Historical Computer Society, you got a meeting coming up, right, David?
Yeah.
So we better cut you loose.
Sorry, buddy, but...
Yeah, so that's it for this time.
Tag and release date, please.
That's right, catch and release. Thanks, everyone, for listening and supporting the show. And thanks to my co-host for doing the show. I love you guys.
Oh, you too.
Please tell someone about it.
Thanks for showing up.
Yeah, mention it in a discussion list or on your blog or on Twitter or, you know, carrier pigeon, however you communicate, let people know. You can also help by leaving a quick review on iTunes. That's if you like us. If you don't like us, send us email and tell us why, and we'll try and fix it. You can find all of the discussed links or the disgusting links in the show notes. Write us an email. We do read them all, and I'm going to make it an effort to reply. David has done a great job on replying, so we will get back to you. And also come visit us at the new forum section that Eric put up at the Vintage Computer Forums. You can email the show.
Very exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be cool over there. And I'm going to let the Retrobits folks know about it, too, so that we can all just kind of collect up over there.
Mm-hmm.
You can email us at feedback@rcrpodcast.com, and you can follow us on Twitter @rcrpodcast. And until next time, Retro Compute!
Nice.
I'll see you guys.
Bye.
Bye.